Two associates of Rudy Giuliani with connections to Ukraine are charged with campaign finance violations. Plus, Jewish leaders in Germany say their community is under siege after a deadly attack this week.
I spoke with one leader of the Jewish community here who said, you know, and I quote, "Right now it feels like it's coming from everywhere. They feel anti-Semitic rhetoric and comments from the left, from the right, from people in the Islamic community and even in mainstream society."
And hundreds of businesses are in tariff limbo as U.S.-China trade talks continue in Washington. It's Thursday, October 10th. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Federal prosecutors have indicted four men, two of them with connections to President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, with campaign finance violations. U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman announced the charges against the men, three of whom are in custody.
They sought political influence, not only to advance their own financial interests, but to advance the political interests of at least one foreign official, a Ukrainian government official who sought the dismissal of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine.
Prosecutors say two of the men, Lev Parnas and Igor Furman, were part of a conspiracy to funnel a Russian donor's money into President Trump's campaign. The men also had close ties with Rudy Giuliani. Our Sadie Gurman explains.
These are people who assisted Mr. Giuliani's efforts to investigate Joe Biden's son, which is the question that is now at the center of the impeachment inquiry. And these two introduced Mr. Giuliani to several current and former Ukrainian prosecutors to discuss the Hunter Biden case. And so they were essentially acting as key conduits of information. We have no evidence at this point that Mr. Giuliani himself is under investigation, and he insists that he is not. But it's certainly going to ratchet up the scrutiny on him because these are his associates, and prosecutors have them in custody at this point and are now able to get information from them, you know, about who else they've been working with and their other activities. And that could certainly keep the spotlight on Mr. Giuliani.
Today's charges come as the House moves forward with the impeachment inquiry into President Trump.
In many ways, these are the people who hold the information that Democrats are looking for. Just after their indictment was announced, they issued subpoenas for these two and seeking information related to the president, to Hunter Biden, State Department officials, and even to Paul Manafort, who was Trump's former campaign manager who was sentenced on charges relating to his campaign work in Ukraine. So these people potentially hold the information that House Democrats are looking for when it comes to their impeachment inquiry.
For all the details and the latest developments on this story, head to our website, WSJ.com. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say the number of vaping-related lung illnesses jumped to nearly 1,300 confirmed cases over the past week. The cases were spread across 49 states, Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Virgin Islands. 26 people have died. One of the youngest victims was a 17-year-old from New York City. Authorities are investigating what's causing the vaping-related illnesses and are urging people to stop using e-cigarettes. The petroleum group OPEC and its allies are considering even deeper oil output cuts ahead of their December meeting. Producers are confronting a glut in global supply and weakening demand. OPEC's Secretary General also pointed to a gloomy economic outlook, citing continued trade tensions and fears over the impact of Brexit. Back in June, OPEC and its allies had agreed to curb oil output by 1.2 billion barrels a day. State-owned Saudi oil giant Aramco is preparing to go public, and bankers are expecting to deliver a valuation as early as Friday. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had set a $2 trillion valuation target, but company executives had said $1.5 trillion was more realistic. Aramco's IPO has already been delayed from its initial launch date in 2018 due to questions over its valuation and the venue for an international listing. High-level trade talks are taking place in Washington, with President Trump set to meet with China's top trade envoy on Friday. Businesses who have been caught in the middle of the protracted trade battle are following the talks closely. Joining me now from Washington with more on their challenges is Wall Street Journal reporter Anthony DiBarros. Anthony, as we all await news from Washington, a lot of businesses are waiting in limbo. What can you tell us about the industries that are most impacted right now and the changes they're having to make?
Basically, we're talking about a wide range of manufacturers or companies that import manufactured goods or even raw materials from China. And the kinds of things they've had to do that they hadn't had to do before were, for example, trying to figure out whether or not they can file for a request for an exclusion. And then once they figure out that process, going through the actual requirements of figuring out for the federal government all the information that's needed to make the filing, such as the cost of the good, their rationale for why they need to import it from China as opposed to, let's say, manufacturing it in the United States. A lot of times I'm hearing that companies are diverting people from their normal everyday jobs to get into that effort of making the filings. I talked to one company in Idaho that the controller for the company, who normally is dealing with day-to-day financial matters, instead has been spending weeks and weeks making these filings to the federal government. So companies are really impacted in those kinds of ways. Other ways that companies are impacted is deciding whether or not to try to order more inventory ahead of the implementation of tariffs. I talked to one company based in Tampa, Florida, that imports guitar and audio accessories from China. In order to beat or try to beat tariffs, and one of the deadlines, they imported a bunch of inventory and ended up having too much, and it had to sit in containers for a while until they could wedge it into their warehouse. So there's a lot of unforeseen circumstances that are happening here.
And what about financial losses?
Well, they say they are suffering. In effect, this is a tax, and it's a tax that they didn't anticipate having to pay. For some companies, it's in the tens of thousands of dollars, and for other companies, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And as a result of having to make up these costs, it's cutting into their ability to either hire workers. Some companies that I've spoken to are letting positions go dark if people retire or leave for other jobs. Some companies are saying that they're not able to invest in new products or R&D the way that they had anticipated.
Anthony, what about filing for exemptions from these tariffs? Are businesses getting any relief there?
Well, under the latest tranche of tariffs that they're filing for, the so-called $200 billion list, the government has actually not issued a whole lot of rulings so far. There are about 31,000 filings as of the deadline at the end of September. And out of those 31,000, the USTR has only ruled on 439 of those, so very few. And what's interesting is that out of the 439 requests that the USTR has ruled on, they've denied 86% of them.
That's The Wall Street Journal's Anthony DeBarros reporting from Washington. Jews in Germany say they're feeling under siege after an attack on a synagogue in the eastern German city of Halle on Wednesday that left two people dead. Authorities are calling it a terrorist attack and say the attacker had planned for a far bigger massacre. Our Sarah Germano spoke with Jewish community leaders in Germany about the attack and a rise in anti-Semitism in the country. She joins me now from Berlin. Sarah, what are the latest details you can tell us regarding Wednesday's attack?
As we left things Wednesday night, police in Germany had a suspect in custody, and today politicians and the Justice Department have told us that they are treating the incident as a terrorism incident, and they've charged the suspect with murder and some various other related counts. And most of all, the incident itself has drawn a lot of scrutiny to the rise of anti-Semitism in Germany. And we've heard from all members of the public sphere about what can be done to increase security and protection for Jews, Jewish places of worship, and Jewish community centers throughout the country.
Sarah, tell me more about that. You've been hearing from Jewish leaders in Germany about the rise of the far right and anti-Semitism even before this attack.
Yes. Jewish leaders here have been saying that they've been saying for months there has been an acute rise in anti-Semitism, particularly in Germany. I spoke with one leader of the Jewish community here who said, you know, and I quote, "Right now it feels like it's coming from everywhere. They feel anti-Semitic rhetoric and comments from the left, from the right, from people in the Islamic community and even in mainstream society. We spoke with a non-governmental organization which monitors anti-Semitism, and they documented over 1,000 such anti-Semitic incidents in Berlin alone in 2018, and that was a 14% rise from the previous year. So there is some documented evidence of an increase of anti-Semitism within Germany.
And something that's been brought up in this latest attack is that there was a lack of police protection at the synagogue that was targeted. Jewish sites in bigger German cities typically have guards, right?
Yeah, that's true. And that's been probably the most passionate point that we've been talking about in Germany today, which is, if anyone who may have spent time here may know, that in large German cities, especially in Berlin and Munich and other places where there is a more significant Jewish community, there are round-the-clock guards and police protection at places of Jewish worship and community. In a place like Halle, which is actually, it is the largest city in Saxony-Anhalt, which is one of the 16 states in Germany, but it's still a, you know, smaller sized city, there was not any police presence or armed guards at the gate of this synagogue. And we heard from a lot of leaders in the Jewish community who were very surprised that that was the case, especially because yesterday was Yom Kippur, which many Jews say is the holiest high holiday on their calendar. We have heard from police in Germany and government authorities who have assured the public that there will be and there is increased steps to offer protection to Jewish communities in the region and throughout the country. For example, last night at a Jewish synagogue in Berlin, I was personally there interviewing congregants and politicians and officials who stopped by, and there were at least a half dozen policemen standing guard outside. Definitely a more committed presence than you would see on any given night, and especially strong on a night given there was an attack yesterday and it was Yom Kippur.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Germano joining us from Berlin. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.